here. First and foremost, this is my first episode. So for everybody listening, thank you so much for taking a chance on me, and let's do it. I would like to let you know, just to give you a little bit of context, that as I'm recording this, I'm currently enjoying a glass of cab. I am enjoying it a little extra tonight because in order to drink it, I had to dig out the bottom half of the cork. So I'm enjoying every sip because it's well earned. Let's go ahead and dive in. I want to explain my name a little bit first. My husband was afraid that referring to myself as a millennial would be a little bit of a deterrent for other generations, but I actually tend to disagree. I think that being a millennial puts me in a great position. We as millennials, we can appreciate a world before mass technology, you know, hello, rotary phone. I remember the days when I wanted to get a hold of a friend and I had to call their parents. You know, I remember the day before cell phones when I finally did get my Nokia phone with the clear case. I had nothing but texting abilities. And at the time, texting was so bizarre. However, we're still young enough that we can keep up. You know, if I wanted to have a conversation with my parents, one of my parents' friends, we want to talk theology, politics, the shit show of a pandemic that we're in the middle of, I can do that. But if I want to do something a little bit more young and fresh, I could probably do the WAP dance that all the kids are doing on the TikTok these days. Now, would it be attractive? It sure wouldn't. So, why movies? I am obsessed with movies. My entire family is obsessed with movies. Every single one of my friends, I am their go-to movie person. They will come to me, they'll ask, you know, we're having a movie night tonight. This is the genre I'm looking for. And I can ramble off about 5 or 10 movies that I would recommend to them based on their personality. I matchmake my friends up with their favorite movies. And so that is a small sliver of what we're going to be doing on the Millennial Movie Matchmaker podcast. But we're also going to be reviewing new and current movies. You know, we got to stay current. We got to figure out what has got Twitter and the gram popping, all while taking a look back at some of our favorite movies within that same genre. So every week, I'm going to come to you with a new movie. I'm going to try my best to stay a purist and stick strictly with movies. We might have to go off the rails a little bit and do some TV because, hello, COVID. But I'm going to do my absolute best to stick with movies. But each week, we're going to come to you with a movie. And then from there, I'm going to rate my top 5 favorite movies within that same genre. Gonna do my best to give you some fun facts along the way. And of course, we are also always going to have at least one honorable mention. Now, what is an honorable mention, you say? It is a movie that is not within my top 5, but has to be mentioned either because I have a deep-rooted respect for it, or that it's just oh so bad that it's oh so good. So what are we going to be talking about today? Today, we are going to review the newest movie on Netflix. It is a juggernaut of an ensemble cast, and that is The Prom. It is a Broadway musical turned movie all about a small town girl who is a member of the LGBTQ plus community. And all she wants is to take her girlfriend to the prom, only to be met by a bunch of bigotry and old-fashioned ideals of what prom is supposed to look like. While this is all happening, a bunch of washed-up Broadway stars that are looking for a philanthropic cause in order to rehabilitate their reputations decide to throw Sweet Emma prom. Now, we are going to get to that review here in a little bit, but first, I want to talk about today's genre. You guessed it, we are talking movie musicals. Now, it doesn't matter if it was a Broadway adaptation or if it was written specifically for the silver screen. We are going to go for it either way. Before we start that top 5, we're going to go straight in to our honorable mention. Now, again, this is a movie that for some unforeseen reason, I love it, it's not on my list, or it's just that terrible that we got to talk about it. This movie is absolutely the former. I really love this story, but alas, it is not in my top five, and that is Les Mis. Now, I love this story. I actually get into a huge debate with one of my friends, you know who you are, about Les Mis. I think that this is truly the greatest story ever told. It is the greatest story ever told. It is, you know, Jean Valjean is a con. He is a thief, and, you know, albeit he stole for his family, but regardless, you know, he was only looking out for his own personal gain. And through a small act of kindness in which the person had absolutely nothing to gain through their generosity, everything changed for him. I mean, everything changed. He completely rehabilitated who he was and became a different person, and a person who paid it forward and dedicated his entire life to impacting whomever he came into contact with. And to me, it's so powerful. You know, the words in the finale say it all. To love another person is to see the face of God. And I just, that's all there is to say. But the debate that I get in with my friend is regarding whether or not Les Mis is the greatest story. You know, he's always, the greatest story is Shawshank Redemption. And to be clear, I love Shawshank Redemption. I think it's an amazing story. I am a huge Stephen King stan. But there would never be a Shawshank Redemption if there was not first a Les Mis. If Victor Hugo had not written Les Mis, there would never be the blueprint in order to inspire Stephen King to write the Shawshank Redemption. Because at the end of the day, Shawshank Redemption is just Les Mis set in prison with Morgan Freeman. Now, why is Les Mis not on my top five if I'm so passionate about it? Well, that is because I have seen Les Mis live, and humble brag, and it is such a heavy subject matter. You really do, in order to be able to get through it and not feel fatigued at the end, you really do need that to be married with the raw energy that comes with watching it live. Without it, I just think it pales in comparison. This is no shade to Hugh Jackman's performance, Anne Hathaway's performance. They did amazing. They are amazing. But to me, Les Mis is a perfect example that not every musical is meant for the silver screen. All right. So without further ado, let's go ahead and roll on into my top five favorite movie musicals of all time. This was incredibly hard because there are so many, and I am such a lover of musicals. It is just such a fun medium. I remember watching an interview on the Oprah Winfrey Show once where John Travolta, he was doing some press for Hairspray, and he had said that, you know, of course he's an actor, he's a singer, he's a dancer, but being able to do something in which it combines all three really just fills his cup. And as somebody who loves singing, dancing, film, it, to me, watching it fills my cup. It's so fun and really does hit all the right spots. So coming in hot with number five, we're going to go with Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Now, to be clear, I am not referring to the monstrosity that was Charlie in the Chocolate Factory, starring a one Johnny Depp, because, wow. I can appreciate that Tim Burton was trying to make it paralleled with Ronald Dahl's novel, but nightmares for days. That's all I got to say about that. But Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, starring Gene Wilder, starts off what appears to be a completely shut down chocolate factory, only to very quickly learn that Willy Wonka is going to reopen his chocolate factory to a small, lucky number of people. And who are those people going to be? Well, he's going to pick them at random by hiding a select few golden tickets into his Wonka bars. And whomever wins that golden ticket gets to see where the magic happens. So the story is going to focus around young Charlie Bucket, who does not come from the lap of luxury. But either way, through a chance event, he ends up winning one of these golden tickets and brings his Grandpa Joe. Now, one of the reasons why this was on my list is because it has fully held up in the zeitgeist. I love all of the memes that are out there, but the absolute one that always makes me die with laughter is Grandpa Joe. Because if you can remember, Grandpa Joe and his wife and the other two grandparents do nothing but sit in bed. And they also share a bed, which is, you know, a little questionable. Alas, when Charlie realizes that he needs somebody to escort him to Willy Wonka's chocolate factory, he chooses his Grandpa Joe, who has been in bed for God knows how long. And as luck would have it, all he needs is a couple weeble wobbles before he's up and tap dancing his way to that chocolate factory. But the meme that I absolutely love from this is a picture of Grandpa Joe looking as excited as ever in his bed. And the caption reads, "Good morning to everyone except Grandpa Joe, who sat in bed for 20 years, allowing his family to wallow in poverty, but hopped up like a motherfucker to go to a candy factory." And to me, that's so perfect. But okay, so I digress. So the story focuses around Charlie. Charlie, he's got high moral fiber. He's a good boy. He always does the right thing. And his fellow winners are anything but that. You know, you've got a kid who watches way too much TV. You've got a glutton, a girl who just can't stop chewing gum. And then you've got the real star of the movie. And that is Veruca Salt. Oh my gosh, she holds up. Her song is amazing. The, "And if I don't get the things I am after, I'm going to scream." I mean, you know, so I'm a mom of two kids, right? And I'm a big believer that we don't judge other parents because, you know, I remember those days when I was walking in the grocery store pre-children, you see some kid going for the Chips Ahoy and screaming on the top of their lungs. And you think to yourself, like, geez, lady, like, handle your kids, get your kids in order. It's so easy to judge. But of course, we all eventually learn that when we have kids, that it's only a matter of time before we get our own comeuppance. And our kids are the ones that are hysterically crying in the middle of a Texas Roadhouse. So as they tour around that chocolate factory, every single kid is picked off one by one by their own demons, leaving sweet Charlie behind. And eventually Charlie learns that this whole ordeal was nothing more than one big test in order for Willy Wonka to find his successor. Now, why is this movie a part of my top five? I love the character development. That is going to be huge for me. You will find that regardless if we're talking musicals or any other genre, I have to care about who I'm watching. It doesn't matter what's going on. I could be watching some kind of Michael Bay explosion or some kind of rom-com that's based right in the middle of the Eiffel Tower. It doesn't matter. If I don't care about who I'm watching, I might as well be looking at paint dry. I love Gene Wilder. One thing that I love about him, so I was reading up about his adaptation of Willy Wonka, and when accepting the role, the one condition that he had was in the very beginning when you are introduced to Willy Wonka, he limps out to the crowd, you know, and then he leans forward. You think that he's about to fall, when in reality, he does a somersault. And that was Gene Wilder's idea. That was his only condition for taking the role. And when the director asked why, he said, because from that point on, the audience will not know if I'm telling the truth or if I'm lying. And that I love. He brought such layers to Willy Wonka because not only is he weird, I mean, he is absolutely weird. Do we all not recall the scene where they're in the boat, like the, "Is it raining? Is it snowing? Is a hurricane a blowing?" And then there's leeches on that guy's face. I mean, ugh, he's a total freak, but he has so many layers. You know, he's sarcastic. He's a touch condescending. One other meme that I'm so into is they've got, and they have a million of these, is just that picture of Willy Wonka's face. You know, he's looking at the camera, super condescending. I'll read a couple to you. Oh, so you're over your ex, you say. Then please do continue talking about them. You love music? You must be such a deep and original person. You eat Panda Express with chopsticks? You must be so cultured. There's hundreds of those out there, but I love how this movie has held up based on the fact that his character is so dimensional. Altogether, the movie itself, it has high moral fiber, right? You know, you've got those Oompa Loompas coming out every single time a kid gets picked off, and they've got a song about being a good kid. You know, don't eat too much sweets, don't watch too much TV, don't be a brat. If you're not greedy, you will go far. You will live in happiness too. Life being Oompa Loompa, doobity-doo. Doobity-doo. And after that rendition, my second wine glass has officially been poured. Let's move on to number four. Now, this is absolutely going to get me a little bit of pushback, and I'm ready for it. That is High School Musical. Now, I know what you're thinking. I know right off the bat what you're thinking, and that is, Lizzie, High School Musical is a total ripoff of Grease. I know that. I'm very well aware of that. I've seen Grease many times, but I connect more with High School Musical. It's not necessarily that I think one is better than the other, but I watch High School Musical and I feel this pull of nostalgia that I just don't with Grease. You know, perhaps it's that I didn't go to high school in the 50s with a bunch of 40-year-olds pretending to be high school students. Or maybe it was just because somewhere deep down inside, all I really wanted was to be able to have a synchronized dance number in my gym. You know, actually, that the latter is true. The latter is absolutely true. I had this conversation with my husband actually the other day of, you know, why couldn't prom be like prom in the movies? You know, why couldn't have we rallied together our entire class, shout out to class of 2006, and all gotten together and done some kind of cool dance. You know, it worked in Cheese, all that. Why couldn't have we done it? My husband, you know, he seemed to look back on his days at prom and think that it was amazing. Sure, I had a fine time, you know, as good of a time that anybody can have at a rec center. But you know, I would have liked to have done something more synchronized than the cha-cha slide. Just me. So maybe that is what I love about High School Musical, is it makes me feel like I'm reliving my high school days, but in the way it should have been done. So the movie, in true Grease-like fashion, focuses around Troy, played by Zac Efron, Gabriella, played by Vanessa Hudgens. And again, in true Grease-like fashion, they meet at a ski resort on their Christmas vacation and they karaoke the night away. And only then to go their separate ways. Little do they know that Gabriella has transferred to Troy's school in Albuquerque, New Mexico. But when they're reunited, it's not the same because Troy is a basketball star and Gabriella's a nerdy bookworm. And they just feel like those versions of themselves that karaoke'd the night away doesn't fit into the true molds of who they are. But eventually, they learn through some trials, tribulations, and some cheeky dance numbers that it is, in fact, possible to sing and play basketball and belong to whatever it was that Gabriella belonged to, some nerd group. Now, I love this movie. The songs were written and choreographed by Kenny Ortega. He is best known for Dirty Dancing, another classic. But, you know, they obviously take all of the modern cliques, the jocks, the nerds, the skater boys, and they hyperbolize them and as if to say that no one is allowed to leave their group and go into another. But they also apply this Disney innocence, which again is what I love. It just makes me yearn for my high school experience. I just absolutely love it. And the songs are so good. So my college roommates, they got me this video game. It was a karaoke High School Musical game, and they wanted to kill me when it was over. Again, we were in college, so as you can imagine, there was not a lot of square footage, and I'm in the living room. We had one television, and I am just on the top of my lungs. No, no, no! Stick to the stuff you know, which is actually the best song in the entire movie. Cafeteria, everybody is going around talking about the fact that Troy and Gabriella have gotten callbacks for this musical, which again is very taboo considering that they are not drama kids. And with their confession, one other student from each clique decides that they want to do a confession. You know, there's a jock that decides that he loves to bake, a bookworm that decides she can pop, lock, and drop it, a stoner that loves to play the cello, and they all get together, and it's so good. And of course, it's light, it's fluffy, it's dessert. But again, that's what I love about it. It's Disney. If I want to go shocked and awed, I'm going to go watch HBO. Enough said. Again, these songs are so great. My son is obsessed with the get your head in the game. You got to get your head in the game. And I mean, honestly, I love that. If that doesn't get you pumped up, I don't know what will. Coach Cal, hot tip. And of course, who can forget about the timeless classic, We Are All in This Together. So a couple years after I graduated high school, I took my college friend back to high school to watch the dance team perform. And I had no idea, but their closing number was We're All in This Together. And I literally cried. My roommate looked over at me. She was like, you're glowing. I have never seen you look happier in your entire life. And to be honest, up until that moment, I don't think I had been. There is just something about this song that I absolutely love. You know, there was a big conversation at one point because a bunch of Gen Xers were not able to wrap their brains around why millennials love Disney, because you have grown adults going to Disney without children. And it's totally normal, totally accepted. And honestly do think the reason why there is such an obsession with Disney is that it does really just make us feel nostalgic for the days where everything was simple. We could just come home from elementary school, open up a package of Dunkaroos, watch some Boy Meets World, and melt away watching Cory and Topanga and whatever kind of shenanigans Sean was going to get himself into, all while waiting for your pizza rolls to come out of the oven. Ah, those were the days. Now we have the days of hashtag adulting. Moving on to our number three selection. I'm really excited about this one. It is The Little Shop of Horrors. I love this musical. This was written by Alan Menken. It was designed for the Broadway stage. And I love it. I love the songs. I love the plot. I love how they're able to take a very dark storyline and somehow make it funny, make it kitschy and cute. Absolutely love it. So it stars Rick Moranis. He plays Seymour. He works at a flower shop on Skid Row with his partner, Audrey. Now, when I say partner, I mean his coworker, right? Because it's a huge part of the story is that he is madly in love with Audrey. Now, Audrey she's emotionally unavailable to Seymour, right? Because she's from the wrong side of the tracks and she's got terrible taste in men. Side note, she has a really, really annoying voice. She's got that,
Seymour. Oh, yes, doctor.
I mean, it's kind of terrible. That's the point, is it's supposed to be terrible. She's supposed to be this bubbly, lovable dit, right? But once you can kind of get past that voice, you really do learn to love her. So one day Seymour inherits this plant. He isn't sure how to get it to grow. Only through the discovery by a small finger prick does he learn that this plant actually feeds off of blood. And it works for a little while, you know, finger prick here, finger prick there. So eventually there becomes a point where Seymour is on the verge of hemorrhaging, and this plant is getting bigger and hungrier, and eventually he talks, you know, and he's, feed me, Seymour, and he needs to eat, and in a true Dexter-adjacent fashion, Seymour begins to feed people to this plant, and the first victim of his just so happens to be Audrey's boyfriend, because, you know, hey, two birds, one stone. He is a sadistic dentist played by Steve Martin. He is the best. I mean, he absolutely steals the performance, though, because I am a dentist. I get off on the pain I inflict. He's so good. He's absolutely hilarious. This scene between him and Bill Murray, that's actually the only movie that they have ever been in together, which is shocking. They're both comedic royalty. But watching them together is absolute dynamite. But Steve Martin plays Audrey's boyfriend. He's abusive. He's this awful guy. Every single time that Audrey addresses him, she has to address him as doctor.
Yes?
And guess what?
Yes, doctor?
That's better. He's so funny. He actually brings, for anybody, shout out to anybody who ever watched Steve Martin when he was on SNL. He had those King Tut days where he just has that expression on his face where he's always kind of opening his mouth and tightening his eyes and almost as if he's in this like intense dance shock, and he just brings that energy to the role so perfectly. So this plant, ironically named Audrey 2, he promises Seymour the world, right? You have money, you have cars, you have fame, you'll have everything that you wanted. All you have to do is feed me. And Seymour gives in for a little while, but then he's at a fork in the road. Do I want Audrey to love me because I have all this other extra stuff, or do I want Audrey to love me for me? And eventually, of course, Seymour decides to take the high road, and he and Audrey live happily ever after. Now, there was an alternate ending because for anyone who has seen the Broadway musical, it does not end wrapped up in a bow. Actually, in the Broadway play, Audrey 2 dominates the world, so it is definitely a departure from the original, but that's the thing about movies, right? Is we want to leave feeling satisfied. So I am not mad about this ending. The songs in this are amazing. The character development is so great. Rick Moranis, there could have never been a better selection for Seymour. He plays that lovable underdog so great because he's got this quality to him that's kind of a little pathetic, but in a charming way. So you're not annoyed by it. You see it and you're like, ah, oh, you're cute. And I absolutely love him. He brings that to every single role that he plays. He was that in Ghostbusters, all of the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids franchises. I have to believe that that is who he is in real life. I just cannot believe that he is some suave debonair living in a penthouse in New York. I have to believe that he is this nerdy, lovable guy. But the songs in this movie are so great. I already touched on a couple. To me, I think the best song in this entire musical is Suddenly Seymour. As far as ballads go, it is so great. This is a song where Seymour decides that he is going to stand up for himself. He's going to declare his love for Audrey, and he's going to take a chance. And oh, it's so good. And then Audrey rises to the occasion. She realizes, maybe I need to stop dating these terrible guys that, treat me like dirt. And maybe I need to go for a sweet nerd like Seymour. And it's just so great. My youngest son, when he was first born, I didn't know what else to sing him. He would cry for hours on end during the day, and I didn't know what else to sing him. Nothing else would come to mind. So I would quite literally hold him and walk up and down our stairs and sing Suddenly Seymour to his colicky ass until he would calm down on a loop. And I gotta tell you, it worked. Anytime that I tried anything else, every now and again, I would go for a little Eliza Doolittle, like a little I could have danced all night. Didn't work. He only wanted Suddenly Seymour. Wasn't mad about it. Kept it going. All right, so moving on, we've got our number two pick, and this is going to be The Greatest Showman. I love this movie. This movie, it touches my heart. It is so fun to watch. It is so exciting. I remember when my husband and I went to the theater to go see it. Shout out to movie theaters. Let's all cross our fingers that we can still go back. I love watching a movie in my basement, but there is nothing quite like watching a movie live in the theater. I digress. But when the songs played, you first hear that, whoa! I had to check my movie stub. I didn't know if we were in the right theater or not, because in my mind, we're going to see a period piece. I had no idea that they're going to be playing bops. But of course, once I saw Australia's sweetheart, Hugh Jackman, I knew we were in the right place. Now, this musical, the songs were written by Benji Pasek and Justin Paul. And side note, they are best known for writing La La Land. So when they signed on for this, they had a 2-hour plane ride to write a song to pitch in order to get greenlit. They wrote This Is Me in 2 hours on a plane, and that was all it took. So this movie revolves around the life of P.T. Barnum, and I know that the actual P.T. Barnum in real life was pretty deplorable, but of course, Hugh's portrayal of him is so whimsical and magical and so much fun to watch. So it starts off when he is a young boy and shows his life, his courtship with his wife Charity, him building his family with his two daughters, working these odd jobs until eventually he comes up with the idea to start the circus. Now, this is a very classic man has nothing, man gains everything. Once he gets everything, he loses sight of why he wanted it all in the first place, only to realize that everything he ever really wanted and needed was right in front of him all along. What makes this movie stand out for me and why it is on my number two, because obviously for it to be this high up, it's got to be something that I stand hard. And I love how this musical marries the overarching message of equality, self-acceptance, and self-love, which it doesn't matter how good you feel. To be totally honest, you know, we all have days. I've got days where I take a look in the mirror and I look back and think, you know, okay. But then, you know, there's for every day that I feel that way, there's at least five where I look at myself and I'm like, yeah, okay, and walk away. So, you know, we all have moments where we struggle with that self-acceptance. And so that is a very heavy topic and it's a very powerful topic, but they are able to marry it with this magic of the circus and colorful lights and the beautiful dancers, and every single choreographed number has a purpose, you know, and you feel the passion of these characters coming forward. You know, you can feel that, of course, they're acting, but they truly are making that connection with the words that they're singing. And because of that, you as the audience, you feel that, you resonate with that. Now to the songs. These songs, oh my gosh, like I said, I was not expecting to hear these songs. These songs are bops. I absolutely love them. And there's almost a little something for everybody. Right? You know, if you're wanting to have a sweet romantic moment, you know, A Million Dreams is for you. The A Million Dreams, it's keeping me awake. The Other Side, which is so much fun. That bartender, who by the way was choreographer for the number, completely stole the show, dancing back between Hugh and Zac Efron. I just, that number was so much fun to watch. My absolute favorite song, though, is From Now On, because to me, that is the song where the lesson has been learned. He understands that everything that he's ever wanted, you know, he's been fighting to build a better life for Charity and for his daughters. But somewhere along the line, he got caught up in you know, what he calls, you know, gets caught up in the glitter. And I love the line of a man learns who is there for him, and the glitter fades and the walls won't hold. Because to me that is so powerful, because it is true, right? You know, because there is no better barometer for a true relationship with value and sustenance than when the shit hits the fan. Am I right? And finally, as you're watching everything transpire between PT and his wife, you know, he also of course brings in Ginny Lind, played by the amazing Rebecca Ferguson. I do love her song as well, Never Enough. So that actually is not Rebecca Ferguson's actual voice. She was too nervous to really sing. So she is truly singing in the performance, because in order to be able to portray that magic, that passion, and you really do have to be singing. You cannot pull an Ashley Simpson moment and pull off that kind of gumption in your performance. It's just not possible. but they did dub over her with another singer. Not mad about it because that is arguably one of the best songs. This soundtrack is so great. They actually did a remix. They brought in a bunch of different celebrities like Pink, Kelly Clarkson, Zac Brown Band. They all did their own reprises of the songs. It just is going to hold up. It has so much magic. And I love movies that are able to bring a new energy and a new flair to musicals because I am all for making the musical cool. Without further ado, coming in hot is my number one favorite movie musical of all time, and that is Hamilton. I love this movie. I love this movie. I actually cannot believe that it's on my list and that it's actually number one, and I have only been aware of its existence with respect to actually seeing it for 6 months. I can't believe that. I mean, think about how amazing that has to be. My first musical was Phantom of the Opera. I think I had to have been about 13. For me to have just seen it and to be catapulted to number one, I mean, quality. I'm obsessed. One piece that I love about this is going back to my earlier rant about Les Mis and how there's just something to be said about that live energy. If there was ever a way to bottle that energy and deliver it through cinema, they figured it out. I actually think that more musicals are going to be doing this now because this is such an amazing tactic to be able to make you feel like you were really there. I mean, you know, the majority of people are not going to be able to enjoy the musical live. First and foremost, COVID. Second, the original cast hasn't been together since 2016. And finally, even if all of those things were not factors, tickets were like $1,000. I mean, think about how many trips to Plato's Closet that is. I think every time you go there, like at best, you make $50. Moving on, as far as character development, I actually feel like it is unparalleled. Looking at the story of Alexander Hamilton, I mean, first of all, if you're just stripping everything away, if my husband were to come to me and say, Lizzie, I want to watch a movie about the founding fathers, would be my response. Unless you're able to give back the 160 minutes of my life that I have lost from watching Daniel Day-Lewis's Lincoln, I am not interested in watching a movie about our founding fathers. But what Lin-Manuel Miranda did was he was able to take this story and, for the most part, stay relatively parallel to Alexander's true story. He was able to breathe life into Hamilton's story. The book that inspired the musical, it's Alexander Hamilton by Rob Chernow, and Lin-Manuel Miranda devoured the book and it inspired the entire musical. And the opening number for Hamilton goes through like the first quarter of that book all in one song, just talking about his earlier life in the Caribbean and coming to America and establishing that he is desperate to fight in a war. He wants to lead a command, make himself useful. He wants to make a difference and have a legacy. And that is really a huge portion of what the entire musical is all about. Hamilton is constantly chasing his own legacy. You know, he's more concerned with making sure that he's going to leave the world and impacted by his existence rather than just YOLOing it and living his actual life. And what I absolutely love about this musical also is that it is narrated by Aaron Burr, the person that brought on Hamilton's demise. Now, one thing that you will learn about me pretty quickly is that I love a character that brings some dimension. I love a likable villain. I want to see some layers. There is nothing juicier to me than a villain that you secretly root for. You know, can I get a shout out to Hannibal Lecter or to The Butcher. You know, I shaded Daniel Day-Lewis just a little bit ago. So let's give him a shout out too. Butcher from Gangs of New York. What about even a Dr. Evil? You know, I love a villain that is able to give me some layers, make me question what I'm watching and question the formula of good versus evil. Because, of course, it's just not that black and white in real life. So I love when movies apply that. I thought Aaron Burr was amazing. Leslie Odom Jr. did a remarkable job. I'm so glad that he won a Tony for that role because, quite frankly, he deserved it. His song is my favorite song. Wait for it. The I am the one thing in life I can control. He just, oh my gosh, he's so great. And I love how you watch his character arc. You know, just as you're watching Hamilton be so obsessed with his legacy, you're also watching Burr. And he is almost in a sense a step further than Hamilton in the fact that his parents have already left said legacy for him. And he is just trying to live up to that. You know, he feels like the world is his oyster. He has his whole life in front of him. But every single time he takes a step forward, Hamilton's right there, five steps ahead of him. And you see the resentment build in Burr. You see Burr feel that Hamilton is living the life that he was meant to live. And you see that jealousy slowly marinate and turn into rage. And of course, that rage gets the best of him. But watching them unfold, I think having Burr be the narrator and being able to watch his story unfold, that was genius. Now, to move on to some of the other characters, of course, the story is about Hamilton, but it also, in a way, is just as much about Eliza. Now, she is, I would say, the silent strength that Hamilton needs. You know, now, is she extroverted and loud and able to command a room in the same way as Angelica? No. But that is a part of what makes Eliza so special, is the fact that she has this calming inner strength that Alexander needs. You know, Alexander brings the fire to the relationship, but Eliza brings the ice. She's able to keep him grounded. And the entire time throughout the musical, you know, every single one of her songs are always focused on trying to get Alexander to arrive at the moral of the story, which is that it's not always about leaving your legacy, but more so, it is equally, if not more important, to live in the moment. And she, you know, she's constantly trying to drill that into Hamilton. You know, she's constant, you know, take a break. Look at where you are. Look at where you've started. The fact that you're alive is a miracle. I love Eliza's character, clearly. The scene at the very end, so in the finale, they are singing what I would consider one of the more powerful lines in a musical. You know, let me tell you what I wish I'd known when I was young and dreamed of glory. You have no control. Who lives, who dies, who tells your story? I have chills just thinking about it. The very end scene in the finale number is, you know, Eliza does the moment. And at first when watching it, I didn't really know how to feel about that. But after doing a little bit of digging, I realized that they are using that moment to break the fourth wall. So when Lin-Manuel Miranda comes out, he is not playing Hamilton. He is portraying himself. And there's a scene where he walks out, he takes Eliza's hand, and they take a step forward into the spotlight, at which point Eliza makes the audible gasp, breaking that fourth wall, allowing Eliza to see the audience in front of him and realize that he has told her story. Now, moving on to the music. One reason why this is my favorite musical is strictly because of the music. I cannot get enough. For about a solid 3 months, we watched this movie every single day. And when we were watching it, we were listening to the soundtrack. It is just that good and so sophisticated. I love that they're able to marry the musicality of having the entire story be done in song form, yet simultaneously shift back and forth between actual singing and rapping. It is and so fun. And these songs like that, so this is what it feels like to match with somebody in your love, but there's a hell of a catch. It's just, that could be on the radio. That is something that could be on pop charts. I love how they, again, they did something that, they did the same thing that The Greatest Showman did, which is they take a musical, they take a period piece, but then they add it with modern music to make it fresh. They make it modern. They make you want to listen to it. To me, this is the new revolution of musicals. And you're just as The Greatest Showman came out with their own remix, so did Hamilton. And they have got quite a roster. So they have got Usher, Alicia Keys, Sia, the list goes on. It is so amazing, the people that they were able to get for this. Oh, it's so good. And just yet another reminder of how timeless and how amazing these songs are. I am fully confident that this is going to be a musical that stands the test of time. Really, what entertainment is all about. You're going to be dazzled, you want to be thrilled, you want to be caught off guard. And to me, Hamilton encapsulates that perfectly. All right, so it is time officially to do our Millennial Movie Matchmaker new review. And as I mentioned earlier, we're going to talk about The Prom. Now, this was an original Broadway musical turned movie. You can currently stream it on Netflix. And this is an all-star cast. You have Meryl Streep, Nicole Kidman, Kerry Washington, James Corden, Keegan-Michael Key. It is star-studded. And again, the premise of this movie is that you have young Emma, who is a member of the LGBTQ plus community. She is the only girl out in her high school, and she wants to bring her girlfriend to the prom. The PTA, of course, being from a small town in Indiana, there's a complete uproar, and they decide that rather than telling her that she can't bring her date to the prom, they decide to cancel prom altogether. While this is happening in New York City, you have got Dee Dee Allen, Barry, and Angie, who are all Broadway has-beens who are looking to rehabilitate their careers. And they think the best way to do that is to pick a small cause and bring some publicity to it so that they can prove to the world that they are actually not the narcissists that everyone thinks that they are. And they see Emma's case, it's blowing up on Twitter, and they decide to go to Indiana and throw her a prom. Right off the bat, one thing that I absolutely love about this movie. So this is, again, this is a modern musical written in 2018, but all of the songs and really the entire energy of the movie has a very 1960s-esque Broadway twinkle to it, if you will. The songs are very, it reminds me of Guys and Dolls and Bye Bye Birdie, where you've got that kind of innocent singing in the rain spunk that I absolutely love and quite frankly have missed. And so this act of throwing Emma a prom is not altruistic, right? They're trying to revive their Broadway careers. But as you can imagine, they go down, they meet Emma, they fall in love with her, they fall in love with her cause. And at the end of the day, they're taught that showing up for somebody else, really does feel good. It's like chicken soup for the soul. And of course, they're not going to have a super easy time, right? Because the PTA feels like they need to be able to have a quote, normal prom, which I gotta say, I don't know what they think their idea of prom is, because I'm pretty sure if you look back to any other teen coming of age tale, if there is a prom, there's gonna be some kind of fornication. Prom is not notorious for being a wholesome event. Am I right? Yeah. So anyway, I actually really, really enjoyed this movie. I actually got big time High School Musical vibes from watching this. Again, I previously mentioned all I want is a synchronized dance at a high school, and they deliver. They absolutely deliver. All that was missing was sweet little baby angel Corbin Blue. You know, I actually, in college, I had a pillow with his face on it. No joke, 100% serious. My friend bought me a pillow with Corbin Blue's face, and he was the focal point of my bed all 4 years of college. I absolutely loved him. Corbin, if you're out there, I'm sorry to say it, but you missed your chance. Happily married lady over here. I actually really love this movie. I love that it felt like it revived some of the classic Broadway vibes. You know, there's a particular song Nicole Kidman sings. So it's Emma is down on her luck. And of course, as you can imagine, you know, if she's going to decide to fight this, then she is not only going to be doing this for herself, but as the only out girl in her town, you know, she really is going to be a trailblazer, questioning whether or not she wants to do that, whether or not she has the bravery. And Angie, played by Nicole Kidman, gives her this song, Zazz. And it's really just all about finding that inner strength, that inner attitude. But the best line from it, Emma mentions that she's so nervous that her hands are shaking. And Angie says, if your hands are shaking, turn them into jazz hands. And it's just, it's so cute and such a wonderful reminder that it is possible to channel that fear into something greater. And, you know, of course, without giving too much away, as you can imagine, Emma, of course, is able to rise to the occasion. And by golly, they're going to have a prom. Of course, I'm not going to give too much away because the goal is to lead you all to watch this movie. I am going to give it a thumbs up. If you are any sort of person that enjoys musicals, which, side note, if you're not someone that likes musicals, you need a hug. I really do. I don't understand why musicals are so polarizing. Go call someone who is in your quarantine crew, who you are comfortable breaking the 6-foot barrier, and tell them that, no. Don't tell them you need a hug. Just go there, state your name. Hi, my name is so-and-so, and I hate musicals. And if that person looking back at you has any soul, they will know exactly what to do. And that's give you a hug. But anyone who is into musicals is going to love this. It's fun. It's fresh. It's going to give you a little bit of that classic nostalgia. It's almost as if you're watching a Chicago or a Guys and Dolls, a Fiddler on the Roof. It's going to give you all of those classic vibes. Yet, of course, it's based in modern day times. So it's going to have that juxtaposition that makes musicals fun. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's got a good overall message, and it's going to make for a fun movie night. We did it. This is my first episode. Down, accounted for, checked off my list. For all of you who have made it this far, thank you for bearing with me. Thank you for taking this ride with me. And hey, you know, I want to keep this going. If you all have any recommendations of a particular movie that you want me to review, drop it in the comments, let me know. But be sure to rate, review, and subscribe for more episodes. And again, thank you so much. And hey, we're doing this.